The unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. Today we're coming to the heart of the Lotus Sutra. A little before this, before the story of Devadatta and the dragon princess, a remarkable thing happens. Suddenly a great stupa, a monument, emerges from the earth, rises up into the air, and a loud voice inside praises the Buddha for preaching the Lotus Sutra. And everyone's very much astonished, as you can imagine, and they wonder what's happening. And the Buddha explains that there was a Buddha in ages past, millions of kalpas ago, named Many Treasures Buddha, who made a vow that after his parinirvana, after his death, wherever the Lotus Sutra was preached, his stupa, containing his whole body, would come there to hear it. And the beings present ask, if they may see this Buddha. And Shakyamuni tells them that first he needs to summon all his manifestations, all the other Shakyamunis, in all the many Buddha lands to come and hear. So all these millions of Shakyamuni Buddhas come with all their retinues, and there has to be made space for them in our own little world. And then Shakyamuni Buddha, when they've all come, everybody's there, present, Shakyamuni opens the stupa so that everybody can see this past Buddha, abundant treasures, many treasures, sitting on his seat. And this many treasures Buddha invites Shakyamuni to come and share his seat, which he does, and he remains there until almost the end of the Lotus Sutra. An important aspect of this story is that this stupa emerges from our own earth. It doesn't descend from some heaven somewhere. And all the other Buddhas, all the other Shakyamunis, come to our world. And Shakyamuni Buddha purifies our own world, makes space for them, makes it our world into a Buddha land, meaning that our very world is the Buddha land. And he also brings a great many other Buddha lands together to our own, making one huge Buddha land. And the other thing is that this many treasures Buddha died many eons ago, but here he is seen and heard. And this is a kind of a foretaste of the teaching of the immeasurable life of the Buddha, which we'll come to shortly. Now we come back to the present story. Once again, there's an emergence from the earth. The bodhisattva who have come from other worlds, they've just promised the Buddha that they will protect the Lotus Sutra and they'll preach it widely. And the Buddha says, no, don't worry. I already have great numbers of bodhisattvas and mahasattvas in this world who will protect it and preach it. A mahasattva means great being, by the way. Bodhisattvas and mahasattvas. Bodhisattvas and great beings. And there's many of them, he says, in this very world who will protect the Lotus Sutra and preach it. At this moment, all over the world, the earth splits and opens up. Dramatic. And there emerge from it great, huge numbers of bodhisattvas and other beings. To everybody's astonishment, they've never seen anything like this before. And these bodhisattvas and mahasattvas have been living under the earth for countless kalpas, quietly meditating and training themselves from our very own world, just living there quietly under the earth. They are beings of this world. And the Buddha says that they will do the work of protecting and preaching the Lotus Sutra, not the bodhisattvas from other worlds. And Maitreya then asked the Buddha, on behalf of everybody, who are all these beings There are so many of them, millions of them. We've never seen any of them before. Where did they come from? And who is their teacher? The Buddha says they must have faith in him and not give in to doubt or fears. He says he speaks only the truth and they need to listen attentively. And then he explains that he himself trained all these beings after his own enlightenment many eons before, and they're all practicing the great vehicle, the Buddha wisdom. Well, Maitreya and everybody else, they're completely baffled by this. The Buddha's only been preaching for 40-something years. How could he possibly have taught all this multitude of bodhisattvas and mahasattvas over countless eons? And they just can't understand it. They say they have faith in the Buddha and what he says, but people in later times will be doubtful, and they might turn away from the Dharma altogether, just give it up. And the Buddha says, you must believe and understand the truthful words of the Thus Come One, i.e. the Buddha. And he says this three times. You must believe and understand the truthful words of the Buddha. And all those present say, world-honored one, we beg you to explain. We will believe and accept the Buddha's words. And they say this three times. These repetitions, they emphasize the importance of this section, the need to practice faith and not just reject things we don't understand. Well, this isn't simply blind belief, because the Buddha is going to explain it. He will tell them what is going on. And for us, as we continue in our training, things we didn't understand begin to clarify, and sometimes they just dissolve. What was I worried about? There's no problem here. We just need to keep going and trust. Well, the Buddha now explains the matter in the chapter on the immeasurable life of the Tathagata. This is a scripture we often chant at memorials and the like. It's the heart of the teaching of the Lotus Sutra. And this is the essential of it. The Buddha says he isn't just here as Shakyamuni, the human being that they see, who appears to be born and then will die. In fact, he realized enlightenment many, many kalpas ago, eons ago, more time ago than can be imagined. And in all these many kalpas, all this time, he has been teaching the Dharma to countless beings, using various skillful means to help them. These are the beings that they see springing up out of the earth. And his seeming birth and death are not the reality. He just appears to be born and pass away. Again, the teaching of skillful means. He says, why does he do this? Because if the Buddha could be seen all the time, beings would take him for granted. They'd become arrogant and selfish, or else they'd become discouraged and neglectful. They would not realize that it is not easy to meet a Buddha, and they would not approach him with a respectful and reverent mind. We've already heard that it's hard to be born as a human being and very hard to hear the Dharma. It's a rare thing. And we have these good roots that enables us to do this. But if people saw the Buddha all the time and the Dharma could be had at any moment, people wouldn't appreciate it. Now, note that the Buddha doesn't say his life is everlasting. He says that it is immeasurably long. He, too, will eventually pass away, as many treasures Buddhas passed away. Our world will not last forever, as we know. Eventually, it will pass away. There will be other worlds and other Buddhas, probably, but nothing lasts forever. But it is an immeasurably long time, so we don't have to worry anytime soon. So the Buddha says that he's not just this physical body that people see. He's much greater than that. This is what he's saying. And as I said the other day, this can be seen as an early form of the teaching of the three bodies of the Buddha, a somewhat esoteric teaching about the Nirmanakaya, the physical body of the Buddha that they all see, of Shakyamuni. The Sambhogakaya, the reward body, which could be seen maybe in visions or personified as Amida Buddha or other Buddhas. And the Dharmakaya, Buddha nature, which is eternal and embraces everything. Now we say that Dharmakaya is eternal. He says his life is immeasurably long, but I think we can take it as being essentially eternal, the Dharmakaya, Buddha nature in all things and in all beings. And this is the other aspect, the other third body of the Buddha. Well, different schools of Buddhism see this teaching in different ways, so I'll just leave it at that. But that's partly what it's talking about. And this is the other great teaching of the Lotus Sutra. The first one is the teaching of the skillful means, how all the teachings can be resolved together in the one great vehicle. And this is the other great teaching, and I think the most essential one. Buddha nature is in all beings and in all things. No doubt about it. The body of the Buddha is always here. It doesn't die and pass away. This is why the Lotus Sutra is so important. And this is why it seems to be constantly praising itself. This is why it says that the Lotus Sutra is the gateway to Buddhahood. We have to recognize Buddha nature in all things, in all beings, and in ourselves. This is essential. And when we don't recognize it yet, to trust it, to trust that it is so. Don't worry if we haven't seen it, or we haven't recognized it, or we don't know it for ourselves. We will, but we can trust it, and we can live in that way, to live with faith that we have Buddha nature, we have that precious jewel within ourselves, and all other beings have it too. And the Buddha nature is within everything. We all can become Buddha. We all have that potentiality. Great Master Dogen refers over and over again to Buddha nature in everything. He says, talking about the precepts, all things, earth, trees, wooden posts, bricks, stones, become Buddhas once we take refuge in the precepts. And in another place, he says, at this very moment, the lands of the earth with their trees and grasses, as well as the walls and fences with their tiles and stones, are all seen to be performing the work of Buddhas. He says it over and over again, this kind of thing. In the lovely chapter in the Shobogenzo, the rippling of the valley stream, the contour of a mountain, the layman Toba has a great realization one night. He hears the sound of the river, the stream. It's the voice of Buddha. He sees the contour of the mountain against the dark sky, the shape of Buddha, the form of Buddha. And this is why Dogen loved the Lotus Sutra so much, I think. As I said, he constantly quotes from it, especially the chapters on the Bodhisattva springing out of the earth and the immeasurable life of the Buddha. Buddha nature in everything. Buddha nature all around us, everywhere. From his early writings to his last ones, he would write about the Lotus Sutra. In his last days, as I said before, as he was dying, he would recite the scripture on the marvelous spiritual powers of the Tathagata. It talks about the teaching, the Buddha constantly teaching. The Lotus Sutra says, and Dogen also says, the immeasurable life of the Buddha is manifested through us, our own training. This is what keeps the Buddha alive in the world. This is what gives them the immeasurable life. This is the immeasurable life of the Buddha. Our doing our training, living the life of Buddha as best we can. And I think we are the bodhisattvas and other beings springing up out of the earth to protect and teach the Dharma, to do our training by putting it into practice. This is how we protect the Dharma and how we teach it, by putting it into practice. The bodhisattvas emerging from the earth, they haven't come from other worlds, they have from some distant heavenly realm. They've come from our very own world with all its problems and its suffering. They're beings of this world. Us, we are responsible for our own world. We can't look to some heavenly beings to come and rescue us. We may ask for the help of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. But we have to do our part by doing our faithful training. It's up to us. As long as the Dharma can be heard in the world, the Buddha is alive within it. And when the Dharma can no longer be heard, it will be time for another Buddha to come. The purpose for which Buddhas appear in the world is to liberate beings, says the Buddha, to help them to become Buddhas. As it says in the chapter on the immeasurable life, how may I help this being enter the unsurpassed way and quickly realize Buddhahood? How may the Buddha help this being and this being? All may be in different ways, skillful means, his great intention. How may I help this being? This chapter on the immeasurable life of Tathagata also has a parable. The parable of the good physician. It's another story of skillful means. There's a good doctor, a physician, who has a good number of sons, children, just say children. And he goes away on a trip somewhere. He comes back and finds that his children have all drunk poison. They've made a mistake, they've drunk poison. Who knows why? And they're really sick and looking like they're going to die. So he quickly makes an antidote, pounds up herbs and the like, and gives it to the children and says, take this antidote. It will help you, it will make you better, it will cure you of this poison because you're really sick. And some of the children accept it and take it right away. But some of the children won't take it. They're so poisoned, they're so confused and demented with the poison that they refuse to take it. They resist. No, no, we're not going to take it. It's not good for us. So he wonders, what am I going to do? So he makes a plan and he says, well, I'm going away now. Take the poison. There it is. Take it when you're ready. I'm going. And then he sends back word that he has died. And the children are all completely grief-stricken. The ones who have taken poison come to their senses. They say, my goodness, our father is gone. What are we going to do? We better take his medicine and see if that helps. So they kind of come to their wits. They take the medicine and they're all cured. And then the physician comes back. They see him and all is well. Again, this is a slightly unlikely story, rather unlikely story, but it makes some good points. It's much more interested in pointing out the teaching than in being a consistent and believable story, because it's the teaching that's important. Of course, the father is the Buddha, and we're the demented children. The Buddha is often likened to a doctor who prescribes the medicine of the Dharma. Different medicines for different people, but essentially the same medicine, the flavor of liberation, the Dharma for being. Now, the doctor doesn't try to force his children to take the medicine. It's like the parable of the burning house. The father didn't try to force his children to leave. They had to do it for themselves. He enticed them out. The Buddha can't force us to practice the Dharma. We have to do it for ourselves. We have to take responsibility for our own lives and our own training. No one can force it upon us. No one can make us do it. The Buddha is not an all-powerful being. It's up to us. Like the 5,000 people who left. He didn't try to stop them. There wasn't anything he could do. But he could know that one day they will hear the Dharma and practice it for themselves. We take responsibility for practicing the Dharma ourselves. Some people take to it straight away, like the children who immediately took the medicine. And others resist and continue to suffer until something wakes them up and they decide to do something. Sounds a bit like most of us, I think, actually. It's our suffering that usually brings us to the Dharma. Our confusion, our wandering, suffering from the poisons of greed, anger, and delusion. And then something wakes us up. We just feel that there's something missing. We decide to do something. The poisoned children decide to take their father's medicine. It's a last resort. They're desperate. He's gone. What are we going to do? Well, let's take his medicine at least. And even the most seriously poisoned ones recover. No one is beyond hope. And then the father comes back, i.e., we see the Buddha. Now, the sutra talks a lot about seeing the Buddha, and I don't think this means literally seeing the Buddha, though sometimes people do. It means we recognize Buddha nature. We see it in other beings, in things, both animate and inanimate, and in ourselves, seeing Buddha nature, seeing for ourselves that everything and everyone is Buddha nature. And when we don't see it yet, we can trust that it is so and live accordingly. As he says, the Buddha is always present, always teaching the Dharma. Buddha nature is always here. His seeming death is his skillful means to get us to take responsibility for our own lives and our own training. Beings can't see him, but they long to do so. We long for truth. And when they have enough faith and reverence, when they're willing to give anything to see the Buddha, then he will appear. We realize Buddha nature. And until then, we have faith in it. Whether we see it or not is not the important thing. It's really that we live by truth. We live according to the precepts. We trust in the teaching of the Buddha. If the beings could see the Buddha all the time, they wouldn't have this faith and reverence, this longing for truth. They would just become arrogant and selfish, he says. And we are like this, actually. When our training is hard, and we don't seem to be getting very far, if we can nourish our faith and aspiration, the hard times help us and make us strong. And we can look back and see, yes, actually, that hard time really helped me. Many people say this when they've been ill or they've had a hard time in training. It just seemed dark. They come through it. That was helpful. I had to just keep going. It strengthens our roots in the darkness, as we often say. And then if a little moment of insight or peace of heart comes our way, we're deeply grateful and we keep on going. If training was easy and enlightenment could be had quickly, we would just be arrogant and selfish, and we wouldn't do the necessary work. We wouldn't take it seriously. We wouldn't appreciate our opportunity to train as we do when it's not so easy to come by, when peace of heart is not just right there, when we get distracted, when we have problems, when we have things that seem really hard to convert. They can actually help us on our way. That suffering can actually help us to do the necessary work. The necessary work is the work on the self, working on the poisons of greed, anger, and delusion. The practice of meditation and the keeping of the precepts. So our simple daily training, this is the necessary work. The cultivation of faith and reverence. It's not about me and my stuff. It's about the great matter, Buddha nature, much greater than we are. That's what it's about. And we try to live by that, harmonize with that, hope to see it for ourselves, and whether we see it or not, to live according to Buddha nature as best we can, according to the precepts, sitting still, doing our best, all the things we talk about, doing our simple, faithful, humble training, the immeasurable life of the Buddha. This is what makes it manifest, just doing our training day after day. We continue the life of Buddha. The Dharma is the life of Buddha. And our training helps it to keep alive in the world. If no one practiced the Dharma anymore, it would just die out. And the Buddha's life would be over. This very world of suffering is the Buddha land. It's the burning house, and it's the Buddha land, as the Lotus Sutra shows us. And as Rupa Mastaji said as well, as the Sutra says, when sentient beings see at Kalpa's ending the raging fires consuming all, tranquil will this realm of mine be, ever filled with devas and humans in parks and groves. My pure land will not be destroyed, though sentient beings may see it as utterly consumed by fire. It may seem as though everything is terrible, everything is suffering, and is also a pure land. How do we see this? By doing our own training, doing the best we can to help ourselves and other beings, keeping to the precepts, practicing faith, and doing our best to bring the pure land here to this very world. Buddha nature is always here, whether we see it or not. We can have faith in it, we can entrust ourselves to it. Whether we're burning with suffering, or we're poisoned with our greed and anger and ignorance, or whether we're at peace, Buddha nature is always here and we are always part of it, no matter what. And we can follow the unsurpassed way, the way of the Bodhisattva, which leads to Buddhahood. We'll talk about this tomorrow. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.